All right, want to go to our phone lines. We're joined by State Representative Antonio Parkinson, who has been out and about around the community, sounding the alarm, telling people we've got to do better when it comes to our violent crime across the Bluff City. And we certainly saw a lot of that this weekend. Good morning, Representative. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So I know we'll talk about the forum you held recently about addressing violent crime, but your response to what we saw over the weekend, right now the report is 15 people shot, including 2 children, just in a couple days here.
Yeah, that's sad and unfortunate. It's a reflection of the times that we're in. You know, we're in a bit of a different time, you ask me, right now. You know, some of this is you know, built on or increased, rather, by some of the policies that are taking place that are passing at the state. Some of it is, of course, rooted in, you know, poverty, which comes with all of its evil cousins, you know, lack of education. And that doesn't mean simply academic education, but even social education, you know, and how to maneuver, how to navigate, how to be a productive citizen. A lot of it is rooted in criminal behavior that is intergenerational. And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done in order to get this thing fixed. But I tell you, man, I always tell people, you know, the fastest way to stop a bullet is a job, right? You know, if we educate people enough to be able to attain and retain a job and provide some income for themselves and pull them out of survival mode, in a lot of cases, you know, some of the crime will dissipate.
I'm curious, Mr. Representative Parkinson.
Yeah,
this is Todd Starnes. I'm curious. Mm-hmm. First of all, can you cite studies that back up what you just said regarding poverty? Because we're looking at, you know, when we see the people that are being arrested, most of them have brand new cars, Dodge Chargers, Infinities. Most of them have guns or weapons they paid for. And in the case of what happened over the weekend in Seattle Park, somebody had enough money to actually rent an Airbnb. We've got some audio. This is what it sounded like. And of all places, we're not talking Nutbush or Orange Mound. This is Sea Isle Park. Take a listen, Mr. Representative. So where do you have studies that can back up what you're telling us?
I don't have a study, but I got people, right? And so, you know, because, you know, one of the things that we do every year is the Block Party for Peace that is one of the largest job fairs in the city. And lives changed because they were able to feed their families. Think about this. A lot of the criminal activity, probably, I don't know what the percentage is, but a lot of it is rooted in trying to gain money, trying to get money, right? And you think about it, right? 72% of the inmate population is on mental health meds. A larger percentage of them that's incarcerated cannot read or are functionally illiterate, right? And so how do you get a job if you can't even read the application? And so when they try to find a way to put money into their pockets or to survive, it's usually, in some cases, the wrong way. I don't need stats for that. You know, because we see it every single day. It's rooted, the drug trade is rooted in economic gain, right? The gang activity is rooted in economic gain.
But how do you respond to the poor people? How do you respond to poor people who say that's really offensive to suggest that the majority of the crime is being committed by poor people? Because the poor people are saying that's just not the case.
What poor people have you heard to say that? I've never heard a poor person say that's just not the case. All of the poor people are the people that are struggling economically, that live in these communities, understand that the person that's out there on the corner that's selling drugs is trying to sell it so they can get some money. I've never heard a poor person say that, and I've been poor. I'm still poor. I've never said that.
Well, we hear a lot about education and the lack thereof leading to what we're seeing, and I think mm-hmm. the study that could be cited is what we saw with even these TCAP rating scores. Representative, that just came out, Memphis Shelby County Schools, only 23% of third graders could actually read or read at the proficient level to go on to the fourth grade. I mean, there seems to just be such a disconnect with either the state funding to the public schools or teachers not doing the work, or maybe it's a parent problem. I mean, when you look at those numbers, maybe that's the link there.
Right. It's a little bit of all of, man, I got so many thoughts that I want to, how I want to respond to this, all jumbled in my head. But check this out. You just helped me with my point. You know, I don't need statistics to tell me that if you cannot read in the third grade, that, that Core Civic is building a bed for you for when you come out, when you don't come out of high school. Right. And I've been a person that's been in survival mode. When you're in survival mode, trying to either eat or feed your family or keep a roof over your head or you're homeless, there you operate differently. You think differently because there are some things that that if you had the economic ability, you would not do when you're you know, not in survival mode. And you know, a lot of people haven't been there, so it's hard to understand. It's hard to for people to really, really grasp that idea that if you are hungry and you are homeless, that you might go and kick somebody's back door in so that you can eat.
So you're telling us that the majority of crime being committed in this city right now is because people are hungry and homeless.
I'm telling you that the majority of crime that's being committed in this city is due to people trying to find a way to get money.
Because we have some of the most well-dressed criminals. They're driving a nicer car than I'm driving, and they certainly seem to have resources. And as one of our listeners just pointed out, Mr. Representative, are you now suggesting, because you mentioned education, is the crime problem, should the leadership at Memphis Shelby County Schools be held accountable for that? Are they part of the problem?
I think that the education problem, the accountability starts at the state level and comes all the way down. You know, you think about it, you think about some of the policies that's coming down the pike, especially from our Department of Education, not necessarily from the Department of Education, but from the legislature. Right. The policies that's coming down the pike, that affects teachers, that affects students, the lack of funding for education. We've never fully funded education in this state. We're still close to the bottom. You know, and the fact that these kids cannot read, those are policy decisions. How these kids have been taught to read, those are policy decisions. They're not at the local level.
On the topic of just young juvenile crime and really where we're sitting with these numbers, it's really spiked this year. I know a huge discussion about how we detain them. Do we detain them? I know the conversation around the Greenlaw Community Center has been a hot topic about issuing a curfew and then implementing. I know you have been speaking with constituents, city leaders around town. What are you hearing? Is this going forward? Is it a no start?
Well, the Greenlaw situation, I can tell you that's a no start, you know, because the people in that community don't want, you know, any type of detention center in their community, and understandably so, right? You know, but when it comes to curfew, you know, we got these truancy centers, right? And what I was told last week that officers are just not taking kids to these truancy centers. If we got these truancy centers, why are we not using those centers and keeping them open as the facility to hold a child until we get them to their parents? You know, and then I thought about this too. You know, what are we doing with the SROs when school is out? Why are you know, because the state, we send money down to all of the districts for, you know, each school to have an SRO, right?
Yeah.
So why don't we keep these SROs in, you know, in employment throughout the summer also? That would help to supplement, you know, the staffing at the Memphis Police Department. And they're all post-certified, from what I understand.
I would say better than SROs are mommies and daddies doing their job and keeping their kids off the street.
And you hit a good point. But here's the other part of that, though, right? It's not a cookie-cutter deal, right? Because you may have mommy and daddy who's working, you know, one or two jobs and trying to, you know, make ends meet, and they might not be able to be there in a lot of households. Right. And so it becomes one, you know, do we stop working so we can be there so we can make sure that the kids are in the house, or do we continue to work so we can continue to put food on the table? And I'm not making an excuse for anyone, but, you know, this is not a one solution situation. It's a multi-layered situation. Some of this stuff is generational.
From your estimate, why do you think we're seeing the numbers increase, like, especially this year, if you look at all of the breakdown of the data? I mean, homicides are up like an incredible amount this year in particular, and we've seen this trend recently, but from your vantage point, why so high?
You know, I think one of the deals is the fact that we are creating so much access for the wrong people to get their hands on weapons, right? You know, when we you know, passed the bill to allow people to store weapons in their cars, right? That's when immediately, you can see the direct correlation to the cars being broken into, and we're still seeing it today. It's still going up, am I right? You know, and so, you know, but there people, these kids are not, it's not like it was back in the day where they're breaking in your car to get your change out of your cup holder. You know, they're breaking into these cars so they can see if there's any guns stolen in these guns in these cars so they can get them. And there's a record amount of guns being stolen. There's a record amount of cars being broken into, you know, and then now these guns are out there on the streets, right, and not necessarily with law-abiding citizens.
Well, not only are the guns back on the streets, Representative, but the criminal thugs are as well. And I'm wondering, you know, and again, our district attorney here was elected on the promise to do exactly what he's doing. And that is getting these criminals back out on the streets as quickly as possible. And now, as we have discovered, that's been a bad decision because the criminals are out there committing even more crimes and they're getting back out on the street. And we've certainly seen that with some juvenile criminals who've been arrested with the monitoring bracelet still attached to their feet. I mean, people are frustrated here. They're really frustrated.
Yeah, people are frustrated. And I think it's vitally important, too, that we find the right balance between, you know, criminal justice reform and ensuring that those people that need to be locked up are locked up. And I always tell people, you know, you got two types of crimes, right? You got crimes that make us mad, that irritate us a bit, and you got crimes that make us scared. And those individuals that are committing those crimes that make us scared should be locked up. And you know, anything short of that, I think, could be a disservice to the people.
All right, State Representative Antonio Parkinson, appreciate you joining us on this discussion because I think you're echoing what a lot of our listeners are. We're frustrated, fed up, and we need some answers. So thank you for joining us on this Tuesday morning.
All right, yeah, people are frustrated. We appreciate you, man.
All right, thank you, sir.